But today is a feast of St. Benedict. For the greatest portion of the world, and for the greatest portion of the human population, the expression might very well go up today and say, well, okay, so what? Big deal. Who is St. Benedict, and what has he done for me? Can you show me, maybe I can read his life, and beyond that, nothing more will be known or said or worried about or considered about this individual. And we ourselves this morning are not going to be that much involved in actually what Saint Benedict did. And from the description of his life, we do know that he did some rather unusual and powerful things, miraculous things. But we're not going to look at that this morning. We have to look not at what Saint Benedict did as far as a human eye could see, but rather what Saint Benedict did, how he penetrated a crust that had been formed over all of God's work, and he offered a solution to us all. Now, I'm not saying by that St. Benedict suggested or even thought about the whole world becoming monks and nuns. He did write a rule for monks, and he did write a rule for women and nuns. We know that. But he went far beyond. He went altogether beyond that, because he had to penetrate something that the rest of humanity had to take advantage of in order to bring some kind of sense to everything that was being done and is being done. In order to do that this morning, I would like to go back, and even though I may be repeating and am repeating myself, I have to go back to the Garden of Eden, when there were two individuals, no more. And these two individuals, I think we can safely say, they're full of grace. They had no mark of whatever, no mark at all on their souls that would have in any way detracted from the fullness of the grace that existed in these two individuals. They were God's great creation. And he loved them. And he loved them dearly. Now, there was someone who was not pleased with this. We call him Satan. Now let's look at Satan for a second. It does appear that we might look upon him as just some fictitious character that was invented by man's imagination in days past in order to keep man somewhat on the track. Something we have invented the booger man, haven't we? For the purpose of keeping our little children, in line. Little boy, little girl, don't do this, don't do that, or the booger man is going to come and get you. might even say now, you better be good. You better not cry. Because Santa's coming tonight. Be a good little boy. Be a good little girl. Otherwise, Santa will not come to bring you all the lovely toys that you really want for Christmas. Is that not true, little boy? Little girl, better be good. And maybe we have invented a character, a fictitious character along the same identical lines. You'd better be good, or the devil will come and get you. Fictitious. My beloved people, I want to get to the point. Are your mothers and fathers who are dead? Are they fictitious? Or your son, or your child, or your daughter is dead? Is that child or son or daughter fictitious? Then why, may I ask, do you come up here and light a candle and burn a candle in this church? Are you burning a candle to nothing? Why do we do these things? We no longer see them. Have they become, are they now no longer existent and fictitious? Is this the truth, beloved people? Is the devil, therefore, since we do not see him, fictitious, non-existent? The devil is every bit as real as your dead mother or father or son or daughter or uncle or aunt or sister or brother or anybody else. And he does exist. And he does control things. The devil didn't lie when he spoke to Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve enjoyed a wonderful existence. It was full of grace and full of the love of God. And those two individuals enjoyed, actually, a companionship with God. And God enjoyed a companionship with them. And he came down every day and visited with them. And he talked to them. And they enjoyed each other's company because it was beautiful. And there was love. There was an enormous amount of love existing between God and his creation. And all of creation, everything in creation, from the soul of Adam and Eve down to the least bug, and everything in between, enjoyed the harmony and the beauty of that association between God and his two children. Nothing at all marred that companionship. And everything was in harmony with everything else. Nothing was distorted. Nothing was marred. Nothing was ugly. Can you imagine what I'm talking about? The devil was too smart, too shrewd to know. Satan was too smart, too shrewd to know that if he would attack, he would not be listened to. But he asked a few simple questions, and he appealed to something that even then there was still, yes, we know this, that, or the other, but there might be a little something, and then I would be able to know the difference between this or that. Well, all you have to do is to go to that yonder tree and partake of its fruit. It's all you have to do. Isn't that simple enough? And look what you will get. And you will know. Listen now. You will know the difference between life and death, or good and evil. You will be like gods. Look at what you will get. At what cost will it be? But all you have to do is pluck and eat. And they did. That afternoon, as was his usual custom, Almighty God came down to the garden. And he looked around and he couldn't find Adam and Eve. And he called out, "Adam, Adam, where are you?" Had Adam heard anything from anybody? Had anybody come down and said, "Naughty, naughty," to Adam? "You shouldn't have done that. Bad boy, bad boy." Not a soul, not a sound from anybody's mouth had been heard by the ears of either himself or his mate. Nothing at all. And he says, "Where are you?" And he says, "We're hiding." And God said, "Why are you hiding?" You see the psychological activity that had taken place in the mind of man, purely psychological. He knew, immediately he knew, that he had to run into the shadows. And he was wearing clothes. And he said, God said, "Why are you wearing clothes?" He said, "Because we were naked." Then comes the biggest question ever. Who told you that you were naked? Nobody. Nobody at all told him that he was naked. He knew instinctively that he was naked. And he ran and made clothes and ran and hid. And he has remained in the shadows. Man has remained in the shadows ever since. When they took that one bite out of that apple, they literally took the entire portion of God's creation and deformed it. And all that was at harmony, all that was beautiful, all that was at peace, all that could live together, everything was rattled. mind was ruined. That's what I did. That's what you did. That's what they did. Just for the biting. Just for that one little act. And everything evil that has ever happened on this earth put together does not equal the enormity of that one little episode. Then is everything lost for us? No. No, it's not. Because God would not permit His creation to be totally frustrated or to be frustrated. And He devised a very special plan, and we all know the story of that. We won't go into that. And now we come to Saint Benedict. Very early on, he developed. See, Saint Benedict, first of all, had been. He came from a well-to-do family, and well-to-do families want to send their well-to-do children to well-to-do institutions, who teach well-to-do stuff. And so Saint Benedict was sent to a well-to-do place in Rome to learn all that wonderful stuff. And he was studying the law. And he did have quite a bit of brilliancy about him. But after seeing what he saw there, he very quickly learned that it wasn't worth it. But he did learn legalities. And his language does have the coloration of legality. But Saint Benedict went beyond legality of the do's, and you don't do this and you do that. Saint Benedict then proposed a way that would crack through the crust that man had placed around himself by the fall. And in his rule, his rule is an instrument of ingenuity. It's just beyond description. And if you read his rule, you will penetrate that crust, and you will penetrate that which we see as we go into the supernatural life, because everything that was before the fall was supernatural. Even God could walk upon His own earth. Everything was supernatural. But that one little incident reduced everything to the purely natural state. No more than what any animal could do or accomplish. And Saint Benedict, with the grace of God, proposed a way of life, not just for nuns and monks, but for everybody. But how few there are that listen. A way of life that would penetrate and then make it possible for you and for me to lift ourselves up from that which is purely natural to that which is supernatural. And that is our work. No, you don't take vows as monks and nuns do. There's nothing to say that you can't make promises that you will try this and do that, and that you will raise the level of your existence from that which is natural, that gains you no more than what it does for animals, to that which is supernatural and becomes that which belongs to God. Your soul, my soul, was made for God. And nothing else will do as far as He is concerned. And so we must struggle to raise what we do to a supernatural level that will make it possible for me and you to fulfill the one and only reason why you're here and why I am here. And he did not say, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not covet. Though those words are found in the rule, yes, I know, I have to be very careful because sometimes when I assume that people already know this, that, or the other, if I don't specifically mention it and point it out, I will get called down. So I have to be very, very careful and make sure that I don't leave any of the dots out, and I must cross all my T's and dot my I's so that nothing goes wrong. Now I forgot where I was. In any event, St. Benedict devised a rule. It was not, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, but the reason why. And then he added something else to it. And that is, you must also raise everything you do, psychologically, interiorly. I'm speaking now in terms of the interior life. The rule of St. Benedict deals almost purely with the interior life of the soul, which you hear so little about. I know that. But the interior life of our souls, that we may raise everything. The vow of you hear us talk about the conversio, the turning around. And we have to turn completely around and to the very best of our ability to raise our way of thinking and assessing things, that they will be meritorious for what we do. The condition of things in the world today, I know God is going to be very merciful, I hope, to the people, the poor people. But He is going to be severe with the teachers of those people today, teachers who have taught that which is wrong, that which is impossible, that which is ludicrous, everything about it, that which is pure devil. And the fictitiousness of it all comes to the forefront today. I'll give you one stupid example. I can't avoid telling it to you. Little children, you're not listening. You'll pay attention to anything I'm saying. To show you how utterly off the track our exalted teachers. I ain't saying who the exalted teachers are. I heard just 2 days ago that one of our major churches in this country get real quiet and listen to this. It's worth listening to. the catechism teacher of the little children, taught the little children. Please pay attention. He taught, or she, whoever it was, I think it was a he, taught the little children that if you believe in dinosaurs, you cannot go to communion. My beloved people, can anything be as bizarre as that? And that goes on all the way through to bigger things elsewhere in the formation of what we today call the Catholic religion. We must come to grips with reality. We are at the point now, I'm not speaking of checkpointing reality. I'm not talking about what's outside with the oil, the fire, the this, the that, and the other. That's baloney. I'm not denying it, but that's, as far as I personally am concerned, that has nothing to do with me. The only thing that has to do with me is what am I required to do in order to put myself back on a track that will lead in a certain direction. And I have to do that. That's why we're here. That's why we turn to God. And the conversio that we speak of doesn't take into consideration only the Ten Commandments of God. The conversio that we speak of takes into consideration absolutely every breath that comes out of me. And I have to turn every breath I take to become the same. I'm obliged to do that, though I fall short of it. Yes, I know. Every breath I take must be creative of the situation that prevailed for those two people once upon a time. And that, my beloved people, is no small job. We speak of the mercy of God. Yes, 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 yes. We promote the mercy of God. Yes, yes, and yes. And it is correct. Of course it is. But there's one thing about it. Yes, the mercy is there. But just as I went once upon a time and reached up and plucked that fruit of perdition from a good tree, I must also reach up and pluck. I must use my own energy. I must use my own intention. I must use my own intelligence. I must use my own effort. I must use everything about me. Everything concerning me has to be brought into that one act of reaching for the mercy of God. And lovely and holy people, nothing else will do. Today's world has lost contact with God. Today's world has lost its intent. Today's world, we say, is full of stress and strain. And it is. But stress and strain is a mental activity. I put stress and I put strain. in my little pea brain. Nobody puts it there. Adam and Eve turned to stress and strain. Nobody told them. Who told you? They did it themselves. They didn't need anybody to tell them. And so we've turned to stress and strain, and we've lost hope, and we've lost love. The two items that are best suited to destroy stress and strain. And anyone who is consumed with stress or consumed with strain has lost hope and has lost love. And there's nothing left but disorder, anger, hate, murder, killings, everything you can think of. What is the basic foundation of hell? What is the basic foundation of hell? We say, oh, fire and this and that. Yes, 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 we can't deny any of that. But the basic foundation of hell, the overwhelming, eternal, please try to understand the word eternal, is the eternal foundation of hate. Imagine the horror of living an eternity of hate. That you want to love, but you cannot love. You can only hate that which you want to love. That is hell. Satan himself hates with a hate that cannot be equaled. And he works constantly at developing that hate in us. And by presenting to us that which he classifies beautiful in order to achieve what he has planned for us. And his one work is to destroy love and hope. Today, is anybody in here able to challenge me that the predominating force in our world today is hate? That our world has lost hope? That our world has lost love? Can anybody deny that? If so, please stand up and tell me. That is the essential quality of today's world. And if you have hope, and if you have love, you will not be tortured with stress and strain. There is no stress, and there is no strain for him who hopes or for him who loves. And such a one does not have to take a pill to calm his nerves, because he is at peace. And that peace, nobody shall take away from him. That is why you come here, blessed people. Guard what you come here after, and protect it with all the blood that's in your system. Protect it, that it never be taken away from you. You have family. You know family. What do these, they're like loose cables, are they not? They're looking and looking and looking, looking for a shoe that will fit any foot. And they can't find it. And they go to despair. And I want to go and close this, because if I don't, I'll be in trouble. I won't be worth despairing. And the thought to remember today deals with despair. Never yield to despair, blessed people. Never yield to despair. As long as the breath of life remains, a man may have recourse to mercy and to ask for pardon. And pardon will be given, but provided the man in his heart, may I repeat, in his heart, be of honest disposition and goodwill. I close merely by pointing out to the little display of St. Benedict. We are, our good fortune in that regard cannot be measured. We are use the word holy. We are the holy owners of one of the major relics of the body of our most holy Father Benedict. It's a major relic. We can't determine, but it is a complete section of one of his fingers. A complete section. That is a major relic. And there it is. And I suggest that after Mass, you come to see it and ask him to help us and protect us and watch over us. We're not playing games. Trust me.